From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pittsburgh, California.
Oh, I'm not from the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
Coming up, Governor Brown proposed a budget today. It may be more modest than you may expect.
Governor on a machine is when the machine tries to exceed a certain speed, then the governor then depresses the speed.
How will the state's supermajority of Democrats respond? Then we'll hear tips from a San Francisco centenarian on how to live past 100.
Be happy and lucky. Also, keep breathing. That's very important. In fact, it's crucial.
Word. And we'll take you to an institution that celebrates the history of arcade games.
What we're trying to do is show the evolution of the coin-operated industry.
Politics, people, and playing games. That's today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Governor Jerry Brown rolled out his proposed budget for the next fiscal year this morning. After voters supported Prop 30 last November, he was emboldened to make K through 12 and higher education a big part of his plan for spending the state's money.
Yes, there's inequality out there. Yes, there's hardship. But I want to take the money that we do have and put it into our schools and our colleges and to help people help themselves get that, not a fish, but a fish hook, a fishing rod. And that's investing in education. And that is the social program that I think will give us the biggest return on our investment.
To break down all of the governor's proposals, we called longtime Sacramento Bee political columnist Dan Walters. So who's happy today and who's not?
Who's happy today? Well, the school people are pretty happy, I think. College people ought to be fairly happy. Everybody else, they're probably happy they didn't get cut anymore, I would think. And you look back on the campaign last year for Proposition 30, the governor didn't promise restoration of these cuts. He said basically we're going to stop the bleeding and put the money in the schools, and that's basically what he's done.
Would you say this was a modest budget in terms of education? Senate Republican leader Bob Huff issued a statement saying new funding to our classrooms is important, but the governor's budget only seems to include the $2.7 million for K through 12, even though Proposition 30 taxes generate $6 billion this year alone, and that Californians should be disappointed.
More than half, certainly, of the money that comes from the new taxes, and much of the remainder, not all of it, but much of the remainder is going to go into this debt reduction. They're talking about reducing, spending another several billion dollars on reducing this $30 billion of budget debt that has built up over the last half decade or so. You can look at it one way and say, well, they're getting less than half the new money. The other way is their colleges are getting more and they're paying down debt. I mean, what's Republicans complain about paying down debt? That should be right up their alley, I would think.
And so that was a Republican response. What reaction can we expect today or tomorrow from the new Democratic supermajority?
Superficially and initially, the Democratic leadership legislature kind of signed on with the governor and said, yeah, this is the path we ought to take. Now, with the caveat that there are going to be some differences. The major problem here is going to be that if the governor wants to spend this $6 billion on schools, colleges, and debt reduction, that leaves out in the cold the advocates for health and welfare programs that have been cut pretty dramatically in recent years because of the state's budget problems. So they're not sharing in the largesse, so to speak, and they're already agitating about that and complaining about that. And that's the question then is, since the money for schools is more or less locked into the Constitution, whether Democrats will stand by the governor in paying down debt or divert some of that money or all of that money into restoring the cuts that have been made in health and welfare programs in recent years. And that's going to be kind of – and they also have some union influence in this because those services are provided by unionized public employees. So there's union pressure coming in there as well.
Right. It says the budget increases flexibility at the local level. What does that mean?
The realignment program they did gives the counties more flexibility and management responsibility for some penal programs, inmates, and also some social and health care programs. And the governor wants to take that same principle and apply it to K-12 education. Less direction from Sacramento, more flexibility at the local level. Give them the money, let them spend it the way they think it ought to be spent within certain parameters rather than trying to dictate it. And that's, he uses that word subsidiarity to encompass that. And, you know, it's a popular thing among school people who felt for a long time that the state was trying to jam them all into a one-size-fits-all sort of thing. So I think you'll see some support for that at the level. Of course, it also gives, when you get responsibility, you also get accountability, which means that you can't blame Sacramento if you don't balance your books, because they're going to give you the money and you got to go figure out how to spend it. So there's a flip side to all of this. He also, I think the most important thing, remember about his education proposal, however, is a very, very, very major change in the way school money is distributed. Rather than simply distributing it on a basis of a complicated formula that basically boils down to how many kids you got, it would be distributed more generally on that way, but also by giving schools that have large numbers of poor and or non-English speaking students more money. And that's a huge change in education finance and the whole philosophy of education finance. And that's going to be very controversial because a lot of districts are going to not get as much money out of this pot, this new pot of money, as they would have liked to have gotten.
That's longtime Sacramento Bee political columnist Dan Walters. What programs do you want to see the state of California spend money on? Leave your message on our tip line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Governor Brown has resolved to spend the state's money wisely this year, and you may be getting started on your own resolutions for the new year. Many of us have made vows to stay healthy and fit, and if that's one of your resolutions, you may want to consider some advice from someone who has a lot of wisdom in that department, and not just because he's a doctor.
I am Ephraim P. Engelman, M.D., my title is the director of the Rosalind Russell Medical Research Center for Arthritis at UC San Francisco.
Great. And if you could tell me your age.
Let's see, 101 plus a few months.
That's right, 101 years old. KALW's Martina Castro went over to UCSF to meet Dr. Engelman and hear about how he became a centenarian.
Hello.
Hello. Nice meeting you.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Sit down.
Thank you. I will.
At first sight, there's no way you'd guess that Dr. Ephraim Engelman is over 100 years old. The good doctor doesn't look a day over 70. When I walk into his office, he stands to greet me from behind a big desk filled with papers and books. A busy desk for a busy man.
Let me just ask Marie something.
Marie is Dr. Engelman's administrative assistant. She arranges the doctor's appointments. And yes, he still sees patients. 3 days a week, he drives himself into the office to see a handful of them and performs other duties as director of the research center.
Okay, all right, good.
I decide to just start at the beginning.
Well, I was born in San Jose, California. And I was born in my mother's home, not in any hospital. And
he goes on to tell me about how he started playing the violin at age 5. His goal was to be a concert violinist. By age 16, he was playing in a movie house orchestra.
And this was in the days of silent movies. And during the silent movies, an orchestra usually played in the pit accompanying the movie.
But when sound was introduced to movie theaters, it became clear that his orchestra wouldn't last long. So Ephraim Engelman decided to go for career plan B.
And I went to Columbia Medical School in 1933, graduated in 1937. Without any honors. I was not a very good student.
So maybe it's not surprising that it was his gift for music that ultimately put him on his path to his career. He says he was in the middle of an interview with Dr. Walter Bauer at Massachusetts General Hospital when they took a break to go on ward rounds.
We visited one patient who had a remarkable heart murmur. Now, most heart murmurs are just a noise, and rarely one hears what is called a musical heart murmur. In other words, it's a distinct musical note that you can hear. And they had an apparatus with which they could measure the number of vibrations that this musical note produced. Not being very shy, I said, Dr. Bauer, I don't need that information. I can tell you how many vibrations that note has. At the time, I had what is called perfect pitch, which means that one can tell precisely what note you're hearing. And knowing the number of vibrations of a note, I was able to predict pretty precisely the number of vibrations. Well, anyway, that impressed Dr. Bauer so much, he said, we don't need any more interview. You've got the job. And that's how I became a rheumatologist.
In case you're not familiar with what it is, rheumatology is basically the treatment and study of diseases that affect people's joints. Dr. Engelman was actually the first trained rheumatologist in all of Northern California. In the 70s, he chaired a national commission on arthritis that led to the creation of the Rosalind Russell Medical Research Center for Arthritis in 1979, which he has directed ever since. By the end of the hour, we've gone over most of Dr. Engelman's life story. We've discussed the only condition he suffers from, spinal stenosis,
which is something that involves the spine. So I'm not able to stand up straight.
We've talked about his continued hobby of playing the violin.
And every Monday night, I have chamber music in my home, usually a string quartet, which is very important in my routine.
But no sign yet of a secret recipe for a long life. So I decide it's time to come out and just straight up ask him. Well, sort of.
Yeah, everyone in my office wanted me to ask you what the secrets were.
I sort of anticipated this question. Well, some of the suggestions. Choose the right spouse and encourage sex with your spouse, that is.
Jean, Dr. Engelman's wife, turned 97 in December. They've been married for 71 years.
Children are an option. And obviously we exercise it 3 times. Enjoy your work, whatever it is. If you don't enjoy it, don't do it. Exercise only if you must. I don't agree with a lot of exercise. I never did. I would suggest we avoid vitamins and other nutrients. Have many interests, music, reading, writing, crossword puzzles. Avoid travel by air. Travel by car instead. It's much more exciting. Don't fall. Now that is an important one. Don't fall.
Okay, those seem a little bit within my control, but I'm not so sure about these next ones.
Avoid heart attacks. Avoid stroke, cancer, arthritis. When convenient, you might see a doctor, especially a rheumatologist. Be happy and lucky. Also, keep breathing. That's very important. In fact, it's crucial. So you see, these are sort of facetious suggestions.
There you have it. Not much of a list of rules for life, but more like a list of no rules. Just life. For Cross Currents, I'm Martina Castro.
The Rosalind Russell Medical Research Center for Arthritis is funded by grants and private donations. For more information, you can find a link to their work at kalw.org. And while you're there, share your rules for healthy living. We'll look forward to reading them. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now, from a century of human life to a century of gaming. The Musée Mécanique at San Francisco's Pier 45 brings together two of the city's greatest tourist draws, history and entertainment. It's an arcade with some of the oldest and rarest games in the industry, some of them dating back to the turn of the 20th century. KALW's Eva Sonsin has the story.
From the outside, 10 Strikes looks like a pinball machine. But as you get closer, you see it's different. It's made of wood, it's about bowling, and instead of flipping the ball up to hit targets, you simply allow gravity to help you get a strike. Another machine here isn't a game at all. It's a mechanical display of a carnival, complete with roller coasters and sideshows. It's a work of art that animates with the drop of a coin. I look up from the amusements and spot something else I don't see every day. A man on skates, sliding past the machines.
There's a bill changer on that sign right there.
Julio, thanks.
Thank you, have fun. This is probably one of my favorite player pianos here. It's not one of the fanciest or more elaborate ones, but it's got a very great tone to it.
This is Dan Zielinski. He owns the Musée Mécanique. He took it over after his father, the arcade's founder, passed away.
My father started this collection in 1933 when he was just 11 years old. He bought a small machine for 50 cents and he brought it home, and his mom and dad put pennies in it and his friends put pennies in it, and he soon had another 50 cents and he went back there and bought another machine, and on and on and on. To make a long story short, we have about 300 machines in this collection now.
It's one of the world's largest privately owned coin-operated collections, where you're actually allowed to play.
I'm Hannah Hamill. I'm from Washington, D.C. I have my quarters out, and I'm ready to pick, but I am trying to decide which one will be the best use of my quarter.
She might try this one.
Put the balls inside of the plunger, and then you hit the plunger, and you try to get anywhere but in zero. And, of course, I put two balls in. And we got 50 points right off the bat.
That one's called the Whirlwind. Then there's the Cantina de Rosa.
They will be dancing as soon as I get the Canadian quarter out. Most machines don't like Canadian coins.
There are machines that show scenes. Alongside driving games and shooter games, there is pinball, foosball, skee-ball, and air hockey.
What we're trying to do is show the evolution of the coin-operated industry, you know, the entertainment aspect of that, from our earliest machine, 1884, give or take a decade, through the more modern machines, and even the more modern video games are 20 and 30 years old already.
What is that
one? Rotating right now. That's the Praxinoscope, the oldest machine here.
This is the oldest machine? What does this one do?
That is the first motion picture machine. Old.
Okay.
Really old. And I don't know if you can see it from this far, but it's doing its thing.
When you put your eyes up to the glass, you see a series of photos, like a flip book. They show a young girl dancing. Zielinski can fix all these machines himself. In fact, he even built some from scratch. One is called Song of the Prairie.
It's brand new. My friend and I just built it.
He looks at a group of teenage boys playing his game.
So what do you think, guys? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
The sign had me curious.
So how did you get this passion of making machines?
What mainly motivates it is the frustration of poorly made machines. And you think, since if you do the repairs all the time, and so you think, well, if I made my own machine, I'd do this this way, and I'd do this that way. And eventually, you end up making a machine.
Zielinski makes his full-time living at the Musée Mécanique. And he's been able to hire 4 part-time workers. Fisherman's Wharf, where the museum is located, draws more than 10 million visitors a year. So business is good, which means even though the Musée Mécanique is old, Zielinski plans to keep it growing.
Always looking, always looking. You have to. I mean, a lot of the machines that I grew up with, we no longer have because my dad would trade it away for something or sell it or whatever. Anytime I find something that's fun to interact with mechanically, coin-operated, something fun. I mean, that's what it's all about.
In San Francisco, I'm Eva Sonsin for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. The places we choose to spend our time are important. They often define essential parts of our lives and ourselves. All week, we're bringing you profiles of places that matter to people around the Bay as part of our community storytelling project, Hear, Hear. This next piece from KALW's RTM's Conhaves takes us to a cultural center in San Francisco's Noe Valley that brings together Bay Area Latvians.
I knew that every Tuesday night there is a choir rehearsal. And music is really important for Latvians, especially choir music. Latvians often sing even though they might not have a very good voice or very good professional abilities. That doesn't matter. People just like to sing and they like being together. And this is a kind of activity that people often do together. So I knew that every Tuesday the Northern Californian Latvian choir has rehearsal in that house. And I went there, it was around 7 o'clock, and you're going to hear the voices of conductor Zinta Zarinja, one of the singers and the long-timers in the community house, Rūta Brūniņš-Grant, and as well the head of the Northern California Latvian Association, Daira Zoldnere. Here we have this Latvian spirit because we sing, and half of the songs we sing are Latvian folk songs. I feel like Latvian, and here I can meet many of my friends that I've known for at least 40 years. And I still don't know how to read notes, but eventually I'm getting there. And as my aunt used to say, all Latvians either play in the theater or sing.
Latvian house is, for Latvian community, is like a family house. But this is a place where family gathers together. So this is a place where everybody is welcomed. One thing is, we have put our heart and work here. The other thing is, it's just a convenient place to come.
I couldn't live at a place where there are no Latvians. I have a very good American friends, but it's not enough for me. I still need Latvians. I don't feel like myself when I don't speak Latvian and I don't spend time with other Latvians.
There are plenty of Latvians around, but not everybody comes. So if somebody hears this story about Latvian house and about Latvian community, you know, everybody is welcomed.
A place that's important to you? Tell us using our online recording tool. Just go to hearhere.kalw.org and click participate. We'll show you how to do the rest there. And that does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Panina Eilberg-Schwartz, Nina Gensler-Debs, Maya DePaula-Hanika, Alyssa Kapnick, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Moo, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, Eva Sonsin, Anna Sterling, and RJ Sloan.
Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And today we bid farewell to RTM's Kana Hovs, who's been with us in the KALW newsroom for the past year from Latvia. Here's wishing him all the best.
Hello, I'm Artyom Skonohas, a journalist from a northern European country called Latvia. Currently, I'm gaining new experience at the KALW News Department as a part of a special scholarship from the Baltic American Freedom Foundation. Perhaps you've heard of it, perhaps not.
No.
Nope.
No, but we're glad you're here, Artyom.
KALW is more than just a local public radio. It gives an opportunity to strengthen Baltic American friendship ties. Help bind our countries together with your financial donation to KALW.org. Thank you.
Brendan Getzel, who you're hearing now, describes his sound as Grey's Anatomy music for house people. He says he specializes in epic power rock. Getzel will be performing with Peter Chung on Saturday at about 7 p.m. at the Bazaar Cafe in San Francisco. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. The house was down to half, and you were grinning in the aisle. A crack, a nervous smile, a nervous joke, a nervous laugh. It's funny how my breath was gone before.